Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, it's been challenging too, obviously, with the plans that they've come set. Felt like battled through it today for periods, and then was able to try to put some pressure back on them at the end there. So would I ideally like to have still been added a couple more, but I feel like we're in a position where we've got an opportunity to win a test match. So pleased to contribute.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. That was Travis Head talking about his innings for Australia overnight. And if you're just waking up, the score is England need a further 224 runs with 10 wickets in hand to win the third test. Australia set them 251 to win. I'm Menas. I'm joined by old friend of the podcast, cricket journalist Gav Joshi. Gav, wow, day four shaping up to be another thriller.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's going to be Sunday night in Australia. I think some people might even plan a sickie as we're recording the podcast coming up for a reason to stay at home. And it might be a late night, and let's hope for an Australian victory. But look, I think it's been a fascinating series. And I think it's going to be about the team that's going to be able to seize that right moment that's going to go on to win this test match. But geez, I mean, look, I think the whole of Australia is going to be tuning in at 8 p.m. Australian time, and it's going to be a really epic Ashes test match, I think.
Definitely. We'll get into the details of day three, but I think day four, a little bit depends on the weather. Now, we saw on day three that when Australia was batting and the clouds were overhead, it was swinging around a bit. Then it cleared up and you could tell it looks a bit better to bat on. So I think day four, I mean, whoever turns up there and sees, you know, if there's clouds ahead, I think Australia will feel confident. Whereas if it's nice and sunny, England will feel confident.
Yeah, the forecast is a bit pretty dry to about, say, 3 o'clock Leeds time. So that's probably about 4 hours of play. And you think if this whole bats ball goes according to plan, England would have wrapped up the test match. But so until 3 o'clock, the weather's, when I say gloomy, it's meant to be cloudy, not really forecast for bright sunshine. So as on the evidence of what we've seen over the last couple of days, Menas, as you rightfully pointed out, if it is gloomy, we are going to get a bit of swing. We are going to get a bit of movement. And let's forget, it's only the new ball, which is 5 overs old. So yeah, I think it's a big chance for Australia. A lot of predictions out there and who's ahead. I think Australia's probably, you know, 60-40 in Australia's favour. I think chasing in the fourth innings, let alone be Bazball, let alone home crowd, it's never easy. They might have done it against mere opposition in the past, but this is a high-quality Australian bowling lineup.
It's an interesting point you raise. The bookies have England overwhelming favourites. They're pretty short priced going into this day four. But I tend to agree with you that if we get a couple in that first half an hour, the tremors will go through England. And they just can't rely on Ben Stokes to bail them out of trouble every time. I mean, I know I'm asking for trouble and he'll probably hit 80 not out and win them the game. But, you know, if he doesn't score runs, I can see that, you know, taking the wind out of the sails.
Yeah, and look, the other important person, I guess, is Joe Root. But if you just look at Joe Root's record over, and look, he's one of the great test batsmen we've had, but whenever there's a bit of bounce in the wicket, we've seen he's never got a test 100 in Australia. He averages pretty well, but in South Africa, I think he's only got one or two hundreds. And this Headingley pitch is quite quick, and especially against the new ball, if Australia can get him in early, he's prone to nicking off, as we saw in that on day two, where, you know, it's probably a bit of an innocuous ball from Pat Cummins. But, you know, Joe Root played these little favourite little dab down to third man and got the outside edge. That shot probably yields him maybe four runs in the first two test matches. But this pitch is different. And I think this is why Australia is going to be, you know, slightly ahead. And as you mentioned, you know, Harry Brook at three, I think he's going to be an important player. But, you know, big pressure on Bairstow, Moeen Ali. And we've seen Chris Wokes, who can handle the bat, but, you know, Australia's probably going to go short. So I think that short ball theory is going to be quite interesting. I'm sure we're going to see it sometime on day four. But I still think Australia had the edge over England.
I guess as well, England are playing one less batter. They've got Ollie Robinson carrying an injury at 11. He'll probably bat at 11 because he can't run very well. Ben Stokes didn't look fit in the first innings. He looked a little bit slow in the field. So England are hampered, and it's up to Australia, I guess, to make the early inroads in that first session so that they can put the pressure on the middle order. Let's look at day three. So a delayed start. They didn't get out there till after tea. Then they played one over before the rain came again. Australia resumed at 4 for 118. They scored two runs. Then they went off, and then they came back out for an extended last session, and it really was England's session with the ball. Mitchell Marsh was out for 28, caught by Bairstow off Chris Wokes. Carey was bowled by Wokes for 5, both of them leaving the ball. Marsh went to leave it and found the edge, and Carey went to leave it and clipped it onto the stumps. And two really big wickets there for England to start things off.
Yeah, and there's also an example of you know, if you're slightly off with your decision-making, because the pitch ball is slightly zipping through compared to the first two pitches, you see those types of dismissals. If you're fraction late with your decision-making and the ball's already onto you, as we rightfully you pointed out with Mitch Marsh and Alex Carey. So good examples there. And I think, look, we have to marvel someone like Travis Head. And yes, he hasn't gone on to make a big score. And when I say that 100, we saw him how proficient he was in the World Test Championship. But I think that's the maturity of Travis Head. On, I think he just knows when to play the big shots. And I just value his 77. I think it's going to be crucial. I think we know how good Mitch Marsh was in the first innings, but just the way he rallied around, you know, the lower order, I think it was fascinating batting by Travis Head. I think he might have just done that innings of 77, might have just won Australia the Ashes manners.
Well, I would love to think so, because you're right, it was absolutely vital. So Carey goes to score 6 for 139, and that's when Travis Head put the foot down. And, you know, he put on 29 with Stark, and then yep. Cummins went quickly. But then the real partnership was with Todd Murphy. They put on 41 to get that score up above 200 and get the target close to 250. Stark scored a nice 16. Murphy made 11 in partnership with Head. But Head hit 3 sixes, several boundaries. And he spoke after play to the media that he's actually finding a pull shot on this tour, that because England are bowling so short to him, he said to Michael Divenuto that he'd, you know, really like to leave England with a pull shot. And we saw that in fine style. He found the boundary with regularity. And despite England bowling well, you know, he had got that lead up to 250, meaning England need 251. And as you say, that might be a vital passage of play for Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's quite, yeah, listening to that conversation with the press, of course, Travis Head, you know, and just the way England have bowled, I think the mistake England have made is they've become far too you know, one-dimensional against Travis Head. They feel that's the only way they're going to get him out. Well, instead of nicking off to slip. And the other mistake I think England have made throughout the Test series is not playing Chris Wokes. I know you're a big fan of Ollie Robinson at Domenic, but look, I think I would have played Chris Wokes. I think he's a fabulous cricketer. The fact that Ollie Robinson's injured and couldn't bowl, I think it made more sense for Chris Wokes to take that new ball as well. I think he's a great new bowler. So I think England have been a little bit more poised with having Chris Wokes in that. I think he's, you know, 3 or 4 Ks an hour quicker than Ollie Robinson as well. And I think he does things. I think he's a more clever bowler than Ollie Robinson. He's also more. And I think his spell yesterday was fabulous again, as it was on day one and two. But I think he's going to be crucial. But yeah, full credit to Travis Head. I think those two little crucial partnerships, as you mentioned, 41 with Todd Murphy, I think that's going to be valuable. Now, look, it's just great, isn't it? Test cricket. And I think Headingley's going to be packed on that Sunday. I think the whole Headingley result from 4 years ago, and Pat Cummins spoke about this leading into just after the Lord's Test and how it helped him with his captaincy. And he ensured that they didn't panic. I think that's in Australia's favour as well. I think they probably want to make England panic. And we've seen that in England, their way of getting out of panic situations to hit out. But if you've got boundary riders, which I think Pat Cummins will put out there, I think England might buckle under pressure. So that's why I'm leaning slightly towards Australia. Likes of Joe Root, Harry Brook, Johnny Bairstow, we know what Ben Stokes can do, but I think it's just going to be a riveting lot of mind games to be played as well.
Absolutely. I want to touch on a few things you've said there. On the bowling attack of England, Stuart Broad took 3 for 45, Chris Wokes 3 for 68, and Wood 2 for 66, and Moeen Ali 2 big wickets, 2 for 34. As you say, I think Wokes added a lot to the attack. Even, you could see Anderson was a bit short of a gallop in those first two test matches, and Wokes provided a similar role, but did it much better than Anderson did in the series so far. What I want to ask you a little bit about Australia's batting in the second innings. We'll start with Labuschagne and Smith. What did you make of their dismissals? I thought in particular Marnus's was very out of character.
It was out of character, and feels like Marnus is looking at the scoreboard now, because he seemed to hang around for a long time, but he wants runs. It's a sign of a person, where a composed or a Marnus Labuschagne who's scoring runs probably does play that shot as well. But here it just feels like that was his opportunity to, you know, score some runs. It almost looked like he's peeking at the scorecard, knowing he just wants runs under his belt, and the fact that he's been getting out, when I say cheaply, it hasn't been for 0 and 3. It's been, you know, he's got into double figures. So I think it was a shot that was brought about because of trying to get those extra bit of runs. And when he looked at the scoreboards, he has like nice 25, 35 under belt. And I think England bowled superbly. Let's not take away. I think how England bowled that on day two was the best in England's probably bowled in the series. I mean, I think it was 45 overs they bowled, and Australia scored at about 2.5 runs an over. And we know how quick the outfield is, that the fielding wasn't overly defensive. So, full credit, I think. But, yeah, I think Marnus, just for the first time, you know, he's still learning his trade. He's tried those trigger movements. We hear about how much his heart is practicing in the nets. But if it's not working out, it puts doubt in a lot of people's mind. And I thought that dismissal, and sometimes things don't go your way. And let's be clear, Marnus Labuschagne in his, you know, 30-odd test matches for Australia has had plenty of luck. We knew, you know, caught off a no ball cup times, he's been dropped 3 or 4 times and on his way to 100. So sometimes, you know, the luck goes against you, and maybe it's catching up to Marnus. But I think the shot was just played in the way that he felt that he needs runs on the board rather than trying to just hang in there, because he doesn't have the confidence that if he hangs in there, the runs have come, and they haven't in this series.
Yeah, it's a shame because I thought he and Khawaja had England at their mercy then, and it opened up the middle order. Steve Smith had a pretty quiet 100th test match. He also got a bit of a send-off from Bairstow. I don't know if you saw it, but yeah. When Smith hit it to mid-wicket, Johnny Bairstow said, "See you, Smudge," and that Smudge did not like that and bit back a little bit to ask Bairstow what he said. I don't think there was much in it. I think a see you later is pretty common in cricket. It's certainly not to the extent that Robinson gave it to Khawaja. But, yeah, disappointing 100th test match for Smith. But, you know, we should take time. You know, I know the English crowd didn't, but, you know, he, you know, his 100 test matches have been phenomenal to watch.
Look, he's enormous. He's going to be one of the greats. He probably is already one of the greats. But who knows? With multiple formats coming in, if Steve Smith, we've got a World Cup in India in sort of a couple of months' time. But after that, if he just sticks to test cricket, who knows? He's only 32, 33. I think he is, might go for another 3 years. You never know. And if he's just focusing on one format, good luck to others trying to get him out. It's just the reflexes might slow him down. But look, it was just one of those shots. It reminded me of something he did on that final test match against India at the Gabba, where I think Washington, the pretty innocuous delivery around the wicket, and it was a half volley that he hit straight to mid-wicket. It pretty much exactly what he did to Moeen Ali. It was interesting listening to Moeen Ali's interview with TMS that he basically, the ball before, he felt like Steve Smith was going to play that shot, and he sort of just, sometimes you go with that gut feel that he's looking for that shot, and he sort of maybe pitched it up a little bit fuller, and Smith wasn't able to get. So maybe a little bit of credit to Moeen Ali as well. But look, disappointing 100 test match for Steve Smith. But look, in the first innings, I think he got a pretty decent delivery. And look, England have focused a lot of their energy on Steve Smith. He's not what he was 4 years ago. He's probably at his absolute prime. But now, you know, little mistakes and probably gets out. I don't think he's, you know, that back and across movement. And I think little blunders in his game are costing him, while they probably didn't as much. And it could be just Father Time catching up, Menas. But look, he's going to be huge, I think, on day four with the tactics. And we know how influential he's been in this test match and throughout the series, discussing tactics with Pat Cummins. And what I've really appreciated about Steve Smith is he's put himself as a fielder in those hot spots, you know, where the catches have gone, and he's managed to, you know, take some fantastic catch. And I think his fielding, his assistance to Pat Cummins is going to be vital on day four as well.
I agree. And talking about Australia's short ball tactic, I'm just curious your view on this. I thought Australia in the first innings, they actually had England at their mercy, and then Wood came out and they went short to him straight away, and it opened the game up a bit. Do you think there's a bit of merit in, when the England tail comes out, playing a bit more conventional cricket, get your slips and your gully? You can still have a short leg and a leg gully and bowl the odd short one, but I feel we're being sucked into their game a little bit. And it cost a lot of runs in the first innings, could come back to haunt Australia on day four when they're chasing. So, you know, where do you sit on that, bowling to the tail?
I'm totally for it. I think they need to do it. I think it's just got to be a little bit wise about it. If you think England, I think there was some statistic going around, their top order that attempted the shot, and it's led to 17 dismissals in this series. So it's clearly working. I mean, yes, Ben Stokes did get 155, but let's face it, it was that tactic that got Ben Stokes out and eventually got Australia to win the match. Yes, Mark Wood unleashed, you know, 24 of 8 balls. But look, at the end of the day, Pat Cummins said on day three that we would have taken that 25-26 run lead at any time. So if you look at what the players have been saying, it's working out. The statistics will prove that it's, you know, England are falling to the trap. From Jeff Boycott to Michael Vaughan to Nasser Hussain have always continuously said that it's stupid cricket. So clearly, I mean, somewhere, and with the series still 2-0 in Australia's favour, the tactic has worked. I mean, look, if Australia come out on day four, try it, and England go on to win this match, they might have to reconsider it. But it's a little bit like a Johnny Bairstow wicket-keeping. If Johnny Bairstow comes out and makes 70 not out today, you'd think, unlikely they're going to pick Ben Folkes for as a keeper, because they want Bairstow to score runs, and if he gets England across the line, well, good on him. But if he doesn't, then there's going to be question marks. So right now, I think Australia's got it entitled to use those short ball tactics because I think the results are going in their favour.
Yeah. Well, let's see. And just one more on Australia's batting effort. I mean, I just think you have to marvel at Mitch Marsh's return. If you'd said to anyone before this test match, when Cameron Green wasn't available, that Marsh would score 118 and 28, you'd have fallen off your chair. But that was a phenomenal effort. Even that 28, you know, is vital because Australia needed some quick runs. And yeah, I'm just surprised at how he was able to come out in that first innings and dominate the England attack like we haven't seen any other Australian batter, maybe apart from Travis Head at Lord's for a little while. And, you know, puts the selectors in a very difficult position going into the next test match. Do they bring Cameron Green in? And some have suggested fiddle with the top order and maybe give Warner a rest? Or does Green now have to bide his time?
Well, back to Mitch Marsh, I think it's just a confidence. I think when you haven't, you know, we've seen it in different sports, when you have nothing to lose, and Mitch Marsh probably in that situation. And he talked about, you know, Pat Cummins telling him, basically, if you want, go and hit that first ball for six, then go and do it. And he said, well, I was never going to do it, but that's the confidence. And I think he came out of that mind frame, and you can tell how high his adrenaline was running. Mark Wood coming in at 95, 96 miles an hour. And you look at Mitch Marsh's eyes, I've never seen them so wide open while he was batting. And I think the adrenaline took over. And sometimes that's the best way to play fast bowling. And I think he, you know, yes, there was a missed chance. But because a lot of the players talk about positive intent. And I think he was. And, you know, but he was also mindful. He left a lot of balls as well. But I think England just fell into the trap. They were almost fearing his sort of, counterattack, and almost felt, you could almost feel likes of even Mark Wood just going, oh, hang on, if I get it marginally wrong, he's going to hammer me here. And full credit to Mitch Marsh, once you get into the bowler's head, you're going to make runs. And yes, I thought he played pretty well in the second innings as well. Don't forget, Mitch Marsh is, you know, you got an important wicket of Zach Crawley on that second evening evening as well. Crawley was looking really good and he managed to get him out. And don't put it past Mitch Marsh to nibble a few around especially if it's overcast. He could nick off. I think, personally, I think he has a lot to do with it. You know, he's exceptional bowling in England. We saw that last time he played, 2019, picking up 5 wickets, I think it was, at the Oval. So
true.
I think he has a lot to offer.
Because he can skid the ball on. He offers something different. Like he comes from a lower trajectory. He cuts it a little bit and it, you know, could skin on and pin them LBW.
Yeah, and, I think there was a summer back in 2017, I think Darren Lehman was coach, and there was a lot of work done with his wrist action. And you see him come really close to the stumps now as well. I think that's one advantage. I think if you look at the Australian bowlers, they bowl a little bit, you know, a lot more closer to the stumps than the English bowlers. And I think, you know, he creates that doubt. So I think Mitch Marsh, we haven't heard the last of him as yet. We'll probably see him fielding on the outfield minutes, and maybe he'll catch Ben Stokes at deep mid wicket that wins Australia the Ashes. So
Wouldn't look forward to that.
I think Mitch Marsh has got a bit of a role to play on day four as well. Maybe nibbling your favourite player, Johnny Bairstow, out.
And then there was a little passage of play where England batted up to stumps. They were none for 27 off 5 overs. Ben Duckett's 18 not out. Crawley 9 not out. Cummins 2 overs, none for 17. Was a little bit expensive. Usually it's Mitchell Starc that maybe goes for a few. I guess one notable thing that happened in that little period was that Australia wasted one of their reviews. There was a flick by Duckett down leg side that missed the bat. Carey thought he heard something. He sent it upstairs and it didn't hit the bat, didn't hit anything. So I'm not sure what Carey heard. And then next ball, Duckett just edged one just short of slip. So there was some half chances in that little period. But as I said, the sun was out and Gav England looked pretty good.
Yeah, but a couple of balls for Mitch Starc, I think they just took off a little bit. I think with that second new ball, the new ball on the fourth morning is going to be crucial. And what we have seen, Menas, is you know, sometimes if you look at England, they've gone hammer and tongs against a brand new ball. And then it's, again, when it's around sort of that 15 to 20 over mark, when it starts swinging a little bit, they've had to sort of bring it back. And that's when someone like a Mitch Marsh might come into the picture. So this has been England's tactics right from the outset, that they feel like these balls, brand new balls, haven't swung that much. Duke balls tenderly start swinging maybe a little bit later on when their lacquer comes off, 15 over mark. And England's tactics have been to get to 60, 70 quick runs. And it's going to be fascinating. I think they'll come hard at Australia again, especially someone like a Zach Crawley, because that's what he's been given. He's given the license. We've heard stories about Brendan McCullum saying, you're playing 5 test matches and you're just going to put Australia under pressure. So he's going to come out and look, if England get off to another, 30, 40 runs in a quick manner, then suddenly, Australia's going to be under the pressure. So it's going to be fascinating.
What do you think of Murphy? What do you think Murphy can do? Because
look, I think he's just going to play the bit of a holding role. I think England are probably, I think Pat Cummins was really smart by bowling Murphy when the two left-handers were in the other day against Ben Stokes and Moeen Ali. So he definitely has a role to play. I think he might just get milked around. That's if I was England, I would look to milk him around rather than go after him. But look, the good thing about Murphy is I think he's more quickish through the air than Nathan Lyon, and he bowls at the stump. So if England are going to play the reverse sweep and the sweep and the paddle sweep, I think he's well and truly in the game. I think he's going to take at least a wicket or two.
Interesting. Okay. Well, want to wrap this up. I don't know if you heard this story that happened in the last couple of days. I'm calling it Haircut Gate. Sir Alastair Cook made some allegations on BBC that Alex Carey went in for a haircut, I think when they were in London, and left without paying. And he said that on, I think, TMS. And then it has since come out that those allegations were false. It was Jimmy Pearson who went for a haircut, one of the Australian reserve wicketkeepers. And he alleges that he paid via international transfer on the spot. And that, obviously those transfers take a couple of days to get in. And he was going to go back and show the said hairdresser the receipt. Now, firstly, they're saying it was a £57 haircut. So, geez, that's a lot for a bit of a trim back of your back and sides, short back and sides. And, funny little story. I don't know if you remember, Gav, in 2017-18 when England were here, there was that story of Bairstow headbutting Bancroft that came out. And it feels to me like there was a bit of that going on here where Cook's heard something and thought, I'm just going to drum this up in the same manner that headbutt was.
Yeah, I think Australian players should be given cash in hand, shouldn't they? Their tour allowance must be going on cards these days. The old timers would say, we got, a nice envelope with £100. We can do whatever we want. With no worries about cards, but clearly that's changed. But look, I don't think Alex Carey's had a haircut. So clearly it was Jimmy Pearson. I mean, a lot of photos circulating. I think you might be right. Maybe, ex-players putting pressure on. We see it happen in the media scope of things, especially more and more. So maybe Alastair Cook, who's sitting up and doing some commentary for the BBC, of course, maybe he just wanted to get it out there. But I think he's a pretty honest man. Just listening to that conversation, the hair cut. He wasn't actually sure which Australian player it was. He basically said, and I think words might have been put into his mouth. He said, was it Alex? Remember, it was just after London.
He was just stirring the pot a bit. And
yeah, I think the only name which would have been on the back papers for 2 days in England would have been Alex Carey. So maybe the poor haircut fellow maybe thought, that's him.
Anyway, nice little bit of play off the field. Well, Gav, thank you for joining me for this wrap of day 3. Where can the listeners catch up with your work?
I've been just doing a bit of on the writing for different websites, Menas, but mostly I'm staying in and listening to your podcast in this series. I've been a little bit off air, but as the summer comes around, I'm sure we'll be sharing a commentary box and doing more commentary.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Gav. It's been great talking to you, and we'll be back soon.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash. Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.